Okay, hello, my name is Robert Browning, and this is a follow-up interview with Donghu about the events since the first COVID lockdown. So I'd like to begin by asking you, 3 years later, what are your feelings about the first lockdown in Wuhan?
Just usually we have a better memory of the events just close to us, but over the last 3 years, but just the most impressed memory is the first lockdown, not the lockdowns later, because it's very it was because it's an emergency and just everybody never experienced some similar situation like this. So it's just a very, very sudden happen. Just the feeling right now for me that you can say it was just hugely chaotic period. Everything in Wuhan was chaotic, was just out of control, out of organization. And especially just something happened in the hospital. That just, you know, the just what was weird is that everybody had to face the chaotic situation by media, because nobody could go out. Actually, it's just you can't go out at the beginning, just before the lockdown. And even at the beginning of the lockdown, some of the people had a right to go out. But what I'm trying to say that maybe it is my first time in my life to learn that how important the media is in your daily life. Because, you know, you have to learn to know everything on WeChat, websites, you know, even by just person to person. So a lot of rumors, yeah. And yeah, secondly, I would like to say, I would like to share that just the speed that self-organization in Wuhan is much, much faster than ever imagined. Just maybe like 3, 4 days after the lockdown notice, I mean, just maybe in 1 week, a lot of self-organization came out, including some team work with hospital, work with medicine, work with transportation. And it works. It worked very well. Just to be honest, yeah. And compare just and compared to the later lockdowns, especially the lockdown last year in Shanghai, I have to say, just the lockdown situation in Wuhan, this first lockdown, is not that bad. Yeah, just among all the lockdowns, the first lockdown is the best. It's the best period I experienced over the last 3 years.
The best of best of a bad situation.
Exactly. And one of the reasons I have to say that the government, or the you can say the authority, the state, they don't know how to deal with the lockdown either. So as a result, they didn't get involved of the regular people's life, or they wanted, but they don't know how to do that. So they just so there was a very big space to leave to regular people to handle with their situation, to handle with their problems. And yeah, that's the That's the crucial reason why the self-organizations worked very well during the first lockdown period.
Okay. So like just one I guess one follow-up question I have for you about that is and it's related to the next question I think a little bit is like you talked about how maybe the people self-organize themselves in or organize themselves in Wuhan in a an efficient way, proper way, a good way, what have you. And then the later lockdowns were not so much well organized. Or maybe the lockdowns in other cities, the people didn't organize themselves so well. So why do you think that, why do you think there was a difference?
According to my understanding, the biggest differences between the first lockdown and the later lockdowns is, as I mentioned before, is the role the government played. Just after the first lockdown, or you can say during the first lockdown period, I think, you know, just everybody, both the regular person and the government, were trying their best to learn how to face how to face an emergency like that, a big emergency like that. And as a result, just the government, or you can say the state, the nation, the country, they have learned how to control the situation, like how to control the information system, control the media, and of course, including a lot of other things like how to to work with the transportation system, to work with even the police system. The lockdowns after the first lockdown, I mean, just in 2021 and 2022. It happened that in other cities, the government used the abilities, or you can say the knowledge they learned from the first lockdown to control everything. Especially to limit the self-organization by the regular people in China. There's a phrase in Chinese, we say 进场, means the government came in. They came in the lockdown, and they control every, you know, including infrastructure, the medicine, even the you can say the material production, masks, even everyday shopping. But what they did is not good at all. I mean, just just the kind of crazy is that you can say generally speaking, it's getting worse and worse. Just the worst point during last 3 years is the Shanghai period. You can say just Shanghai is the big city in China, and just the regular person in Shanghai人, they have a very strong self-organization, just you can say a tradition, but every good aspect didn't work at all, because, you know, everything was controlled by the government. You can't do this and that. You just, the only thing you can do is follow the instruction by the government.
So they limited, they limited like what people could do themselves.
Even there was no, just very strong you can say, how can I say, just self-organized drivers team in Shanghai. But you know, just during the first lockdown, there are a lot in Wuhan.
Right. So did these other lockdowns affect you in any way?
Yes, it did.
Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, let me see. Give me 1 minute.
Yeah, no problem.
I like to say the first lockdown's impact on me was very direct because I was in Wuhan during the lockdown period. Yeah, just my and my parents, my family were just locked in my apartment, and every single day we have to just live in a very, it's a very, very special situation. Like you have to make plan about everything, including even including the food. Yeah.
Right.
But the later lockdowns happened in other cities.
Right.
Actually, right. I experienced one lockdown in Beijing, but because I was in campus during that time, so it's a little bit different because you can say I was a little bit used to the lockdown after the first lockdown.
Right.
So the later, the biggest impact just shocked me by the later lockdowns, you can say, was some emotional shock or a cultural shock. I experienced the lockdowns by on media, actually. So of course I was getting involved in some self-organization during the later lockdowns, but it is not that direct on myself. You mean what I say? This is one of the differences. And I can say that.
What about the restrictions? I think there were a lot of restrictions, maybe about traveling or, you know, going from place to place. Did this impact you in any way? I mean, when we spoke in 2021, you had a situation, I think, in Hangzhou or Suzhou. But were there any other instances of like the restrictions affecting your life at all?
Yeah, for sure. As you mentioned, the traveling restriction was very strict. After the mid of 2021 and to late 2022, and just both city to city and even inside one city, one of the major new things is that we can, how can I say in English, just the code, you have to scan code by code every time, every day. Sometimes you have to scan a lot of codes in every entrance, maybe like maybe 20 or 3 times one day. Even just go out to buy something, buy food or buy drink, you know. And even go to a shopping mall. I think this is one of the restrictions I experienced just so strongly. When I just when I came to Toronto late last year, one day my wife and I go to a shopping mall, and she stopped at the entrance, and she was trying to find a code. And suddenly she realized that, come on, this is Canada. There's no code at all. Yeah, you can say how we experienced during the scanning code period, or you can say just 2 years of scanning code.
Right. Right. It became like a habit.
Yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, in Beijing and in Shanghai, just, you know, they just, these two cities were more, you can say, more strict than Wuhan. We experienced, like, you know, we go to just maybe convenience store to buy some food, mm-hmm. and we forget our cell phone to pay for the food, so we have to come out to go back to bring the cell phone again to pay for the food. Maybe it's like 5 or 6 minutes, but even you do that, you enter again, you have to scan the same fucking code.
Wow.
Yeah. Just like, you know, you go out the store and you enter the campus, one code, and go out campus, two code, but the second code, go into the store again, mm-hmm. the third code. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Amazing. So, like, as you mentioned, you are now in Toronto, and I know, of course, that you came before the protests took place. You were in Toronto before all that happened. But I do want to ask, like, how do you feel about maybe living abroad when those protests were happening?
I'd like to share some own experience. When I was in Toronto, just maybe after I arrived, the 2 weeks the protest just came out, and it didn't shock me strongly, because you can say the protest was in my expectation. Yeah, mm-hmm. I did believe something would happen, mm-hmm. after the two year and a half. And I'm abroad, so I'm not suffering in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I was still just very just anxious and worried about my friends and family and just every people in China, because it looked very just large and strong, just on media. Mm-hmm. And a huge number of my friends get involved in the protest. Some was just go out in their neighborhood to do something, to argue with the security or the policeman, mm-hmm. And some just go straight on the street and to make some political just attitude, mm-hmm. And just a certain number of my friends or of who I know were arrested, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, some of them were still in prison right now, in jail, and no result at all. Yeah, the police station. No, police never informed us just what the process is going on or what the situation of my friends. Just 2 or 3 days ago, one of my best friends came to Toronto to visit me, and we discussed a lot of topics mentioned in this question. And he said, because he was deeply involved of the help, mm-hmm. to make help to the protesters. So he said even in Beijing right now, there was still a lot of arrest on the protester. Yeah, even now there may be like 80 or 90, just less than 100 in jail, and the number vast, just larger than when that's them our estimate.
Right. Huh. So like with your friends or friends who were arrested, you know, like, so you received, like, you and your other friends maybe received no notification that they were arrested, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's like they just disappeared, it sounds.
Exactly. Even their parents didn't know where they were.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which prison they were in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no notice at all. Mm-hmm. No information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And what they did was just going on the streets and show a white paper, a piece of white paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just so we can maybe get it on the recording here, like, what does the white paper mean?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. Just there were a lot of discussion about the meaning or the just political meaning or of the white paper in protests in China. But just for me, I think it's a very single thing. It means I do like to show something, to tell you something, bad situation, just hold my mouth.
Uh-huh.
To shut my mouth, yeah. So what I can do is just a mouth without any voices, a paper without any symbol, any character, any letters, any content. Just mm-hmm. it's a very basic and pure and simple political gesture, but I think it's very, very strong.
Uh-huh.
It means a lot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, just like you state your authority, just don't want us to say anything, write anything, show anything. But I can show a thing without any information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just stand in front of you and be silent. Mm-hmm. Be silent.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mouth, in my mind, in my brain, there are a lot of things I want to tell you. I want to share with others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just something called protests as a white paper revolution. I don't think it's a very typical revolution, but it's it's a very, very specifically Chinese protesting method.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was come out in a very, very specific situation in contemporary China.
Right.
Yeah, that's my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, Robert, just most weird thing that I heard somebody tell me after coming out from the jail, but coming out from the prison.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Donghu, it's very strange. Just the policeman asked me what I want to say."
Mm-hmm.
She said, nothing. Just there was nothing on my paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She
was still suffering in one prison in Beijing for 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a piece of white paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's amazing that just something like just a white piece of paper can become kind of a symbol of a symbol that has so much meaning. Okay. So I guess like the last question I have for you is just because of what it's a very general question, so please respond to it in any way you feel you think is best. But like, what have you learned about yourself because of all this that's happened?
First of all, is what a single person in China can do is much, much more than he or she imagined before the COVID-19, or just before the pandemic. What I'm trying to say is a single person could do a lot of things to help himself or herself, help their family, help their community, help their friends, even the society, even some people so he never know before. That's about the disability to how to say to handle with oneself or other thing in the pandemic. And secondly, I'd like to say what I learned is that self-organization is very, very, very important. It's very crucial in contemporary China. I don't want to say the government is purely bad or they cannot do anything good. Yeah, it's very complicated, but I have to say this, self-organization played a very, very important role in just social life in China. Yeah, just b before the pandemic, I know theoretically, but I never experienced that. Just how important self-organization should be and could be. Yeah, in my life. And just thirdly, I think just after experience all of this stuff, all of things, I have to say, just I became a little bit more authentic or honest than before, because you sometimes you have to face the elephant in the room. Just don't try to pr just never try to pretend it's gone. It is there, yeah. And just face the situation and try your best to handle with the elephant in the room, yeah. And I yeah and yeah and okay. Just last I want to share with you is that what a person did makes sense. Yeah, just everything will have a result. Just yeah, we have to believe ourselves. Just don't never say that what we did is useless. It is useful. Yeah, maybe just yeah just the effect is may not come out just very quickly, but maybe just in future.
Could you maybe possibly give me an example of like a situation where like you maybe faced this elephant in the room?
Just give me 2 minutes. I was thinking.
Yeah, no problem.
There is an example for me, because as you know, I was trying to write something. Most of them is about music, but just you can say I just I wrote something on Medium, on WeChat, on my account, and I think I was learning during the last 3 years to just how I can write in front of the elephant. Just every time I plan to write an article, I have to tell myself that there is censorship, and I have to write something against the censorship, but at the same time protect myself and my friends. But I have to know how to write something just against the elephant, but let the elephant know. But at the same time, just to make some protection yourself, just for myself. That's very, very complicated to share with, but you know what I'm saying.
I do, and that's, I think that's a good example. It's a good personal example. So before we wrap up, like, is there anything else that you wish to share?
That's all. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I think we'll wrap up here. First, I'd like to say thank you again for doing this, and if you could just stay.
Oh, no problem.
If you could just stay on the call for a minute, that would be good. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.